Welcome to Beyond the Blue Wall. I'm your host, Henderson Bloomer. In 1970, artist Judy Chicago pioneered a feminist model for art and education with her students at Fresno State College. A year later, Chicago was invited by Miriam Shapiro to collaboratively expand her program at CalArts, where they would go on to develop radical and highly influential forms of art, pedagogy, and performance. Now, Red Cat, CalArts' Downtown Center for Contemporary Arts, has a new exhibition that celebrates and honors this groundbreaking and ongoing effort, and today we are joined by Red Cat's chief curator, Daniela Leia Quintanar, and assistant curator, Talia Hyman, to talk about their work curating the feminist art program 1970 to 1975, Cycles of Collectivity. I wanted to give you both an opportunity to introduce yourselves. Daniela, can you tell us about yourself and your path to being at Red Cat?
Yeah, sure. Hello. Thank you for the invitation. Well, my name is Daniela Lieja Quintanar, and I'm Chief Curator and Deputy Director of Programs at Red Cat. And now I have a year working there. It has been an awesome, crazy year for me. And I am originally from Mexico, specifically Mexico City. And I have 10 years now living in Los Angeles, my second home. And yeah, I just have a curatorial practice since Mexico. And then I was able to connect very well with the community here when I came to study a master at USC in curatorial practices. And then I've been in different places, but one of the most fundamental places for me to connect with the art community of Los Angeles and the United States, and also the border and the artists from the border, was LACE, Los Angeles Contemporary Exhibitions. And it's like a very important place for me to have a connection with this region, and then also with the artists of this region that I'm very interested to work with. And Red Cat was kind of like an awesome place to move from LACE to a place that also has a lot of connections, you know, like CalArts with the art history of Los Angeles and California, but also globally. So it's like a very important path for me, or like it was like a good way to jump from an institution like LACE and Red Cat.
Yeah, Talia, can you introduce yourself, and also some of the same questions about your path as a curator and getting to Red Cat?
I am originally from St. Louis, and I went to NYU for my undergraduate degree, where I studied art history and gender, sex, and sexuality studies. I had intended actually to just be an art historian because I really loved studying art history. And even before that, I was actually a dancer, but I started actually working as a curator just to kind of get additional experience working in museums. And then I really kind of fell in love with the process of actually working with artists who are living and helping to commission and create new projects. I've worked in a lot of different positions in the US and abroad. And I'm most immediately coming from the Carnegie Museum of Art in Pittsburgh, where I worked as curatorial assistant of the 58th Carnegie International, Is It Morning for You Yet? And that was a really great experience for me, where I was able to take my previous research into gender, sex, and sexuality, but expand it into much broader global histories. And so coming to Red Cat has been really exciting, where I've had the opportunity to just immediately dive into this explicitly feminist, explicitly intergenerational exhibition that's really rooted in a West Coast history, in a Southern California history. And I guess another small little tidbit is that prior to my time living in Pittsburgh, I was here in Los Angeles for a few years working with Joan Los Angeles. And in that time, I did audit a class at CalArts with Michael Ned Holte. The course that he taught was in the room that Michael Asher would have his marathon lectures. So that was a really interesting, like, embodied way for me to absorb that history a little bit, and also lead into some of the questions that are asked in this exhibition of why were those histories so easily transmitted, but others, like the feminist art program, maybe haven't been as much.
I appreciate both of you sharing those journeys, because the role of a curator is still something that is under-historicized, or at least is obfuscated in some ways. So all those parts help I think others understand what a curator does to the point of getting to what happens in the exhibition. What does a curator do with an exhibition? What is the relationship with the artists, with owners of the artworks, donors, things like that? So in making this exhibition, and this is somewhat like the feminist art program itself, there were a lot of collaborators. And I'd like to know some more about who the collaborators were and are, and what were their roles.
You know, when I arrived, there was this idea of like creating a show about this history, these histories also like in plural, because they're histories from different perspectives. And that has been not that well documented. I mean, they're very well documented, but also they haven't had the same presence in colors history. There's always like the famous colors mafia and the amazing work of Baldessari and Alan Capro. And there's like this game of getting more attention, certain histories, that it's something that always happened. So when I started this position, I was like, how I'm going to do a show with these histories that are complicated, these feminist histories. And first I was like, I need to do it with a collective, with a group of people. So I intentionally was able to invite certain people, but also like while the project was developing, more people got integrated. So first I was working at least with Anna Briss, who also is a curator. And she was like assisting me in the curatorial practice. So she like participated in the research. And then we have an intern from CalArts, and I really wanted to do it intergenerational. So Julia Rafaela, she also participated in the research part. And then we have also a very young intern from Santa Cruz, Aranza Vilchis, who was our intern from the Getty. And then she also participated actively in the research and in the curatorial thinking. And then we invite Lucia Fabio, who is a curator originally from LA, and she has been doing a lot of research. I know her for a long time, and she's been doing a lot of research in terms of this generation. She has worked with Barbara T. Smith, with Susan Lacey in her studio directly, and also co-curate a retrospective of Alison Knowles. So it was like, you know, very important to have these voices. And then we have Jishan Shin, who is from USC, is a student from the class of Susan Lacey. So she has been collaborating with us in the process of creating a series of talks that we can talk later. And then we also invite Janet Sarvains, who is a faculty, you know her, a very well-known faculty at CalArts that has done an enormous research about these histories and about the history of CalArts. So she was our advisor. And then finally, Ekta Agarwal, who was an alumni from the MFA program at CalArts. Mm-hmm. And she's originally from India, but she did a small show in the library at CalArts before about the feminist art program. So I knew her before that. And I was like, okay, I need to work with this person that she also worked in the archive. So we bring all these different women from different contexts. And of course, Talia, who was like a amazing support and really help in the shaping with me of the exhibition.
It's a great group, but I wonder if that also speaks to underreported or underserved histories of CalArts. It does require this additional labor of bringing all the disparate parts that haven't been collated into a public knowledge so much. And Tali, I wonder if when we talk about shaping, when Daniela mentions that, like what was the shaping process like? Maybe we can talk about a little bit of exhibition design or materials, or if that speaks to what shaping means for you.
In terms of shaping the exhibition design, we worked with an incredible exhibition designer named Kim Zumfei, when we were working with her, the direction we wanted to go in was this cycles of collectivity concept, thinking not just about feminist art histories through the lens of the feminist art program, but also through the lens of different movements that are happening today, how curators and artists are researching this history in new ways and continually broadening the shape and definition of feminist art. One of the points of access that Kim was really working from was thinking about the colors used in feminist protests around the world. So historically, in the feminist art movements, you'll see yellow, you'll see green, you'll see purple. And we decided to really stick with purple, which is the primary color used in feminist protests today around the world. And then we also wanted to integrate into that green, which is used more so in protests for abortion access today, and also integrate black in, because in Latin America and in Iran and lots of other parts of the world where you see a lot of feminist protests happening right now, that color is often integrated, particularly in Mexico, where black is kind of color used by anarchists. And, you know, Daniela has spoken really beautifully about how to be a feminist, you also have to adopt a kind of anarchist attitude as well, or anarchist ideology. So kind of bringing all those colors in so that we're acknowledging this as both a historical and contemporary issue and art practice as well. So you do see a lot of purple integrated throughout the show. You have three different shades of it, and that denotes different historical moments. So the oldest works in the show have the palest purple, and the newest works in the show have the brightest purple. And Kim was really thinking about the columns in Red Cat as a kind of core sample of feminism or feminist art. So you can see, just as a core sample, they'll show you different colors and gradients for how old the earth is and what's impacted it, what minerals are inside of it. You see, like, the older layers have different shades than the newer layers. So that was really the direction we were thinking about and working through. For the exhibition design, another important component was to really make it feel like part of a campus. Because, you know, Red Cat, we're very lucky to have this amazing downtown space, but these activities were happening in proximity to Cal Arts, to Fresno State College, to the Women's Building, to all these different kind of institutions. And we really wanted to bring that kind of student vibe to the show. So you can see there's posters pinned to the architecture. There's a lot of great seating for people to gather in as if they were in a quad or a library or some kind of space where you can gather and have lively campus discussions. That campus environment was very important. I should say that when I joined the curatorial team, we were just a couple months out from opening the show. So in terms of shaping the show curatorially, I think my role was very much to narrow, because we actually had so much material, you know, with all these different curatorial voices contributing, there was such an expansive checklist, which had, I mean, just an incredible, incredible amount of material. So it was really just about editing down and saying, I know we want to show these 10 objects, but actually we only have space for one. Which one are we going to pick? You know, it was sort of the worst part of curatorial work is having to make those decisions.
There's a whole other part of the show that we haven't fully touched on yet, as the introduction of work by four artists making work contemporaneously. And having to balance the historical and the contemporaneous. And I'm curious about what that collaboration with these artists was like, and also specifically what kinds of topics they felt like they had to bring to the conversation after seeing and collaborating with you on the history that you were putting together as a curatorial team.
The title of the show refers specifically to that time, 1970 to 1975. Which is our like center, but then cycles of collectivity, that's the part that we were thinking about, like how we are seeing these histories is like this continuation of like looking back into the past history, but also contributing and growing. So it's like a cycle that keeps moving. And based on that, I invite four artists that are also part of CalArts, so also different generations. So the first one is Susan Lacey, that she was part of the original cohort that started in Fresno and then moved into CalArts. And then Andrea Bowers, who is also like a different generation, has collaborated a lot with Suzanne and was professor of Gala Porraskim, who also was invited to be part of the show. And then A.K. Jenkins, who recently graduated from CalArts. So we have very different conversations, of course, with the four of them, because they come from different contexts and their work is very different and has different approach in media and like conceptually. So I will say with Suzanne, it was very interesting to me to connect with her archive. We are presenting the Performing Archive, which is like a big installation. We're just presenting a partial installation. We're actually presenting a piece in collaboration with Leslie Labowitz, which also was important, the fact of collaboration. She and her bring together their archives that goes from the 70s into the present. So it's like a huge installation with hundreds of boxes. And also at the same time, they recorded different artists from different generations, women students, that they invite to engage with their archive and then record them. So like what we are presenting at Red Cat is basically this video installation that has different TVs, and in each TV there's an artist talking about this history and specifically taking objects directly from the archive and reinterpreting those objects or just doing free connections. So it's kind of like a collaboration of a collaboration inside of this installation. So we really wanted to have that piece. And as part of that piece, she's actually doing a commission. It's called Primary Resource, a Conversation. And what we're going to do during different dates, 3 dates during the run of the show, she's inviting 2 artists every event from her generation. And then she's pairing these 2 artists with a class and a professor. And then they are going to have a conversation. So these 2 artists are bringing their own archival box from, you know, from their own work. And they are bringing it and presenting to this class, to the new generation. And this new generation is going to coordinate, perform basically a conversation with these 2 artists. So I actually want to say the names because they are really awesome people. So we have Barbara T. Smith with Ulysses Jenkins. They are going to be in conversation with a class from Amelia Jones from USC. So it was important to have like this diversity, these diverse voices, diversity in universities. And then the second date is Nancy Buchanan with Patsy Valdez. And they are going to be in conversation with a class from CalArts that I'm actually co-teaching with Amanda Beach and Michael Netholte, that we actually designed a class for this show. And then the third one is Susan Mogul, who also was part of the Feminist Art Program, and Linda Vallejo. And they are going to be in conversation with the students from Jenny Sorkin from UC Santa Barbara. So we're having like important conversations that something that the show has, and Talia mentioned, is like the pedagogy. You know, like this Feminist Art Program was also a new pedagogical experiment. So we wanted to like apply that. So this is going to be like a big performatic experiment of pedagogy and also conversations and really connecting, you know, like the primary source is the archive, but also is the person. But then that person is going to respond to questions to the new students, and they are going to bring also their own knowledge. So it's going to be beautiful.
It's also something that is very CalArtian. There's a sort of storied history around, again, Michael Asher's classes and the collections of his class list from his post-studio class to become a part of this art history narrative. So utilizing that same kind of thing with classes now to talk about knowledge production and to talk about historicizing. And you also had a recent event that was Red Cat and Mocha like co-production convening called the Our Everyday Insurrections art and feminisms in California. And I wonder if you could talk about this very public kind of give and take of panel discussion and films, and what the audience was for that, and what kind of topics were brought up.
We had a really incredible symposium jointly presented by Red Cat and MoCA that really took its kind of seed from the exhibition that we have on view at Red Cat. And MoCA also has on view an exhibition called Mapping Los Angeles, 1970s and 80s, that has some photographic documentation of Nancy Udelman, who was in the original Fresno State College Feminist Art Program and the Cal Arts Feminist Art Program later on. So we, of course, physically are neighbors, but to the best of my knowledge, never been any type of collaboration. And we wanted to sort of change that to kind of, you know, for the sake of feminism, come together. And we had a symposium, a day of panel talks and screenings that was truly like incredibly moving to be a part of, I have to say. So the first event day we had was a screening of Judith Dankoff's film, Judy Chicago and the California Girls. So Judith Dankoff, for her UCLA film thesis, went to Fresno State College to really film what was going on at the feminist art program. She went to the studio. She like filmed all these really incredible rehearsals and interactions and things. It was really extraordinary. And she submitted that as her thesis. And so we screened that film and then had four of the participating artists give it a panel discussion about that experience that was led by Lucia Fabio, which was truly incredible. You know, these women are probably in their 70s now, let's say. I'm not sure exactly. But hearing them speak today about how influential and how formative that experience was and continues to be for them was really incredible. And then after that, we kind of moved to Red Cat. We gave a very quick kind of introduction to the exhibition, and then we brought together a panel of four incredible contemporary artists who are working through different kind of more expansive feminist art practices today. Those artists were Amitis Motivalli, Ilana Mann, Pau Pescador, and AK Jenkins, who's of course one of the CalArts alums in the exhibition. And that was also a very fun and unruly panel that had a lot of expansive, beautiful, just really like revolutionary, I would even say, feminist approaches. And you know, Pau Pescador gave a presentation that was between a lecture and a performance. It was really wonderful to see. AK Jenkins, famously, I will quote her forever and ever, she talked about her being invited into this exhibition and her engagement with the Archives on the Feminist Art Program. I'll just really never forget her saying, "Judy almost tricked me." And she really was talking about the decision-making process of, did she want to make a commission that was a direct response to these archives that kind of paid homage and like only honored this program? Or did she want to do something a little bit more true to her that was a little bit more complex? There were really a lot of different important contemporary artists participating in that panel. And the third panel was of artists and curators, Suzanne Lacey, Cecilia Fajardo Hill, and Amelia Jones, who are incredible organizers and curators in their own right, who have really kind of paved the way. Amelia Jones is an incredibly important voice in this history. She curated Sexual Politics at the Hammer, which is a really crucial exhibition that, you know, wasn't received well at the time and now is considered a very important chapter in art history. Cecilia Fajardo Hill is an incredible voice. She curated the Radical Latin American Women exhibition that was really kind of groundbreaking for its time as well. And, you know, she has a really great exhibition on view right now in Riverside as well. So these are voices that have really paved the way, and to bring them together into contact with artists from the feminist art program and artists who are, you know, more emerging today was a really incredible experience. And I think Amelia really said, "This is the future." And she was very humbled, and her being humbled made us very humbled. So it was a really great experience.
All of the ways that you've laid out the different kinds of public programming, I think, makes it very clear how much the exhibition is in process and progress. Like, it is a place that brings discussion into it and creates additional meaning on top. And complicating these histories, I think, for many of us is like the important part of coming to know what happened before, but making it so it doesn't feel like there's nothing left to be done because of that. You've already said what's next, Suzanne Lacy, and the additional art performance pedagogy that's going to happen throughout the course of the show. Is there anything that you have sort of taken away from this exhibition as you think about your work leading into the future?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I actually wanna, talking about the future, I wanna touch on the project that Gala Porras Kim did, because it's based in a book that in the 70s, as part of the feminist art program, Miriam Shapiro organized. Anonymous was a woman, and that book has like a series of statements of artists, but also has a sections called Letters to a Young Woman Artist. And then they invite 100, I think some 100 different curators, artists, writers to write a letter to the next generation. And what Gala did was just taking that idea and put it in place now. So we invite around 53 artists from different generations and like a very, very diverse group of artists, trans woman artists, queer artists, also like challenging the idea of woman as an identity. And then we receive the most amazing words for the future generation. And like, we have letters like Beatriz Cortez, who also is from CalArts, and she's Salvadorian. And she started being an artist. I mean, I think she always was an artist, but professionally after having a PhD and then starting to like formalize her practice as an artist. So she like crossed out the word young woman artist, and then woman too. And then her letter is a whole essay about what does mean being an artist in this moment. And that project was very beautiful because show the care of community and the care of collectivity and the importance of sharing experience, not in a hierarchical way. It's not like, oh, I'm the senior telling you. It's just like it's like an open letter. It's an open voice. And I think for me, this exhibition was so important in terms of learning how to work with different voices. I'm really, my curatorial practice is really inspired in collective life and social movements. And I always have worked with a community that is more connected with me. And in this case, the Feminist Art Program was a history that I knew, but I wasn't that close to all these women artists. So it was like a big challenge for me to connect with these other voices. And that was a huge learning experience. Sounds super idealistic of like, how can we have a better world? But yeah, that's what we want, right? Right now, we really want to kind of like transform our world. And it really challenged me if I come from a totally different context, a totally different community, how can I be in dialogue with this other group of women and feminists that we have at least in common the idea of like transform and advance, and also how to be different and like accept the difference and the conflict, and how to do in terms of conflict, like move and propose different projects. And I also want to highlight the challenge of doing a feminist show in a art world that is not feminist, that still is not feminist, and then we're still struggling in that is very individualistic and still has like that very strong structure of like everything needs to be in this way. And when you have a lot of voices and a lot of the voices that are super political and has a lot of creativity, it's a challenge to put them out there when you are working in a box, in the gallery box that we are, of course, at Red Cat trying to break that continuously. So yeah, that was something that is for me to keep thinking and experiment ways of how to present this type of art in this art world that we are in.
We'd like to thank Daniela and Talia for joining us today. The Feminist Art Program 1970 to 1975 Cycles of Collectivity will be on view at Red Cat through February 18th, 2024. You can learn more about the exhibition and Red Cat in our show notes or by visiting redcat.org. Our Season 3 theme music was created and performed by 2018 graduate Nicholas Savignano. You can learn more about Nico by visiting him on Instagram @_OKNICO. That's @_OKNICO. This episode was co-produced by Greg Hull and me, Henderson Bloomer. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe and share, and we'll see you next time beyond the blue wall.